So like the way I kind of think about it is like the way I compared submitting and letting go as being two different ideas is letting go is like what a leaf does, like what a tree does to a leaf. It just lets it go. And that's beautiful, but like what happens to the leaf? And submission is that leaf submitting to the earth and finding like that dirt and the grime that it decomposes into and finding it to be a new method of growth.
On this episode of the Breathe Faith and Creativity podcast, and just in time for the 4th of July, we discuss poetry as a marriage relationship, the power of submission, and what freedom looks like for a woman of color in our modern context. Today, we talk with fellow Definitive Soapbox family and staff member Sheila Sadra. We have a wonderfully deep and intimate show lined up for you today, so let's get at it.
Welcome to the Breathe podcast, where we explore the intersection of faith and creativity. Interview artists from all walks of life to discover how faith plays a role in their art and expression, hoping to encourage you to live a life of creativity and faith. And now, your host, poet, writer, and pastor, Eric Ongoy.
Yep. Welcome back to the Breathe Faith and Creativity podcast. Thank you so much for joining us once again. Before we get into the show today, as usual, if you haven't already done so, please visit our Patreon page and show your support for the Breathe podcast. Like most shows, we are listener supported, so I would really appreciate the love. And watch this, for as little as $1 a month, that's right, only $1 a month, you along with the greater community can support this podcast and keep it going. We are about halfway through the year, so maybe this can be your halfway through the year New Year's resolution and just find a level that works for your budget to support this show, and we can continue bringing on amazing guests like we have today, and I would truly appreciate the support. All right. So today we have a wonderful show for you. We have a fellow poet with us today. Sheila Sadra is part of the Definitive Soapbox family, amongst other amazing works she's involved with. She's a great human being, an amazing soul. She's a fiery lady when she gets on the mic. She loves community and pouring into the next generation. And I am super blessed to consider her family and my sister. Sheila, welcome to the show and thanks for coming on today. What's going on?
Hi, wow, that was like such a sweet introduction.
I know, in Soapbox, right? We usually don't do bios, but I thought this was a great opportunity to talk you up.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I appreciate it. It's always nice to like hear from, like, I think some of the best compliments are from people who really know you and who have like shared space with you for a very long time. So I really appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. So as the pattern has been on our show, we usually start off with a real basic intro. So, I mean, I spat out a bunch of stuff that I find valuable in you, but how about from you, for those listening who may not be familiar with you or your work, why don't you start off by telling us a little bit about yourself? It's your bio moment, and maybe you can just answer the question, who is Sheila?
So I'm a poet, artist, I guess at this point, like a community organizer, if I could call myself that, that I just work in the OC, LA, Long Beach area. And I write a lot about, you know, mental health, being Iranian. I write a lot about love. And I just like, all I care about is like connecting and building bridges between people and within yourself through writing and through performance. So yeah, that's kind of me in a nutshell, just caring about and loving people and my family and my friends and my community as much as I can.
So were you born in California or?
Yeah, I was born in Orange County, actually, in Irvine. Okay. And I was like raised here. And then I made my way out to Long Beach, where I truly feel like I became a person.
That's cool. So you said you're Iranian.
Yes.
Talk to us a little bit about that. Just how was it growing up? Just, you know, I'm sure your parents kind of poured in the culture into you and growing up around that. Can you unpack a little bit what that was like growing up?
Yeah, I grew up in like a very, very, very Persian family, which essentially means it's very passionate, very loving, very giving and hospitality. But the love looks very different than contemporary like Western culture, which is very individualistic in my experience, where Iranian culture is very communal.
like very community centered and like very ride or die. And there's just like so much complexity with growing up Iranian in like a predominantly like white, like affluent community, because there's like a lot of like whitewashing of culture. So a lot of my work is rooted in unlearning a lot of like kind of like Western individualistic kind of perspectives. Being Iranian is just like really it was something I was ashamed of for a really long time, and being able to reclaim that and see that my culture is more of a strength than a weakness has been really like effective in how I live and how I make art and how I try to organize as best as possible. I don't know if that fully like answered your question.
No, it did. Were there any traditions growing up that perhaps would be considered, right? So as a Filipino American, there are a bunch of traditions that a lot of my friends were like, what are you doing? Were there any traditions, family or cultural traditions that perhaps you were a part of growing up? Looking back, maybe you were embarrassed of, but in hindsight, you're like, man, that was very enriching. That was very valuable for me.
Oh yeah. Like, my parents really forced me to go to culture school, where I learned to read and write in Farsi. And I learned, so like the community that I grew up in was also Muslim. So, I grew up like learning about the Islamic religion. It was like the main source of like kind of moral foundations of my life. And, I used to hate going to culture school. I hated reading it. And, I like it was a really rundown thing. Like it was in an office building, and it was something that was like I didn't talk about, and I was kind of embarrassed about. And then now that I look back and I see that I am genuinely one of the very few people in the OC area and like Iranians that can read and write in Farsi, and also like has an experience very in depth with like Muslim culture. It's very rich, where like a lot of Iranians don't necessarily have that experience because either their parents didn't want them to learn that because they wanted to assimilate better, or they themselves like rejected it. So
yeah,
it's one of those things where now I'm like really grateful I did that, but back in the day I really hated that. And if you ask any of my Farsi teachers, I was a pain in the neck quite a bit. I had a lot of attitude.
So are you currently still practicing Muslim religion?
No, I'm not. Okay. I have like a lot of the way I think about it is it like culturally informs me a lot. Like the way I move is probably very Muslim. The way I kind of practice life, because it was ingrained in my morals. It's probably like the fabric is there, you know, the strings are still there. So, although like I'm not necessarily a practicing Muslim, I think like I'm very heavily influenced and inspired by, Muslim culture. And honestly, like, a lot of religions, because I also grew up in an area that was like heavily, Christian as well. And so having that conversation within myself was really impactful to how I view the world.
So I want to stick on this a little bit.
Absolutely. Hold on, give me one second. I'm going to see if I can step outside.
Yeah, that's cool. So growing up, just being influenced by the Muslim religion, what would you say perhaps, right? Because living in America, there's a lot of misperception about Muslim and Islam. What would you say, what are some of the beauty, I'll ask it that way, well, what's some of the beauty that you were able to take away from, you know, growing up under, again, Muslim teaching and the Islam culture? What are some of the beauty that that you were able to latch onto and just claim it and be proud of?
Yeah, well, at least for me as of recent, or just in general, what has really kind of ingrained is like the intention behind the words. So Danusha Lamaris, I think that's how you say her name. Mm-hmm. She wrote a poem called Inshallah, where she kind of dissects the word Inshallah, which means God willing, if God wills it. So if you're ever like wanting to do something in the future, Muslim people will say Inshallah, God willing, or if God wills it. And I found that to be a really comforting thing to say when I was going through a hard time. Or like one of my favorite like kind of ideas, but also the word Islam means submission. And a lot of people will say like, that's a really like, why would you want to be submissive? Or they kind of, it's used in a way that's kind of connotated negatively. Mm-hmm. Where to me, actually learning to submit to just like the ebbs and flows of life, and even though like it's something that you might not, it's something that you didn't want, this is against like what you were planning for, you know, to submit to the situation, I find that there's a lot of strength rather than like fighting it or just like accepting it, submitting to the circumstances rather than, because sometimes things will happen and you'll be like, well, I just don't care anymore, or like you'll fight it really hard.
Yeah.
And I think both of them have like kind of issues, but submitting to it, being like acknowledging it, knowing that like that circumstance isn't what you want.
Yeah. No, that's good.
It's like, and like knowing that that's not good, and the acknowledgement of like, okay, this is not something that like I wanted, but submitting to the pain, submitting to the disappointment or whatever feelings, I think that's really good groundwork to build like stronger character. Like a stronger character.
Yeah.
So there's stuff like that, or like Muslim, like at least my experience with Muslim people, it like are just really good at sitting through pain. The level of like faith. I think a lot of like the things that I find beautiful and comforting are also things that I just like grew up with. So they're very familiar. Rather than like, I bet it's very similar to other religions in a way. Yeah. It was just comfortable and familiar, but, yeah, especially the submission thing has been very much like a guiding kind of light for me, because there's a strength in submitting in a way. Yeah. Just like kind of like being like, this is what it is. And like, I submit to the pain that I feel, or I submit to the love that I feel, and like accepting it in a way.
Yeah. No, that's so good, because, you know, I grew up Catholic and now, you know, practicing Protestant. And unfortunately, a lot of people have used passages, like there's this passage in the New Testament where in Ephesians, in a marriage context, it says that wives should submit to the husband. And that's been taken out of context so horribly, where men would use that to their advantage. And unfortunately, at times just, you know, abuse their wives, or just, you know, take advantage of their wives and use scripture. But the way you articulate submission is such a beautiful way of understanding that. And I think ultimately that way, and the way that you described it, is the way that God would want us to view it as. It's not that he's controlling us, but there's this beauty in just, just submitting to like going back to what you said, if God wills, right? There's a Spanish phrase. That's similar. It says, si Dios quiere, which means if God wills, right? And
if God wants it.
Yeah, that's good. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, I wanted to add kind of, because like I speak in metaphors, because hi, poet. and so like the way I kind of think about it is like, the way I compared submitting and letting go as being two different ideas is, letting go is like what a leaf does, like what a tree does to a leaf. It just lets it go. And that's beautiful, but like what happens to the leaf? And submission is that leaf submitting to the earth and finding like that dirt and the grime that it decomposes into, and finding it to be a new method of growth. So to me, submitting, it letting go, it's like so dismissive.
Yeah.
It's so disposable, where submitting is not in that way. Wow. It's like staying. Which I think there's more strength and power in that foundation. So it's something it's really informed my life.
That's good.
In a lot of ways.
Man, I'm just going to let the record go, and you just talk like for like an hour, because this is so.
You're so sweet.
So, you know, speaking of poetry, let's shift a little bit. How long have you been writing poetry? And maybe you can talk about what the writing process is like for you.
Oh, absolutely. I've been thinking about that actually very recently because I've never really counted the years because I kind of count them in notches in my life. If we really want to get to like the origin point of when I started, like, just like I wrote a poem and it was not like a school assignment. It was, I think I've been writing for 12 years now, which is kind of wild. The way I kind of see it in notches is I wrote without realizing what I wrote 12 years ago. But then when I started really investing in writing was when I was like probably my senior year of high school. So that was like, I think 6 years ago. Where I went to my first open mic and I read a poem. That was my first like true investment into something more than just I was writing my feelings. So I kind of see it in like seasons, because I think with artists, you start just doing something as a form of comfort and like just a form of expressing yourself. And then I just like hit a point where like I wanted it to be more. I was like seeing like YouTube videos on Button Poetry with like poets that like I can't even believe like I can speak to now, that I can't even like that I have relations with and like relationships with and mentorships with or friendship with. And but then I was just like watching them in awe, and I went to my first open mic and I thought it'd be like a slam, and it totally wasn't. It was so like my aunt and my mom showed up and it was a mess, but I'm so glad that I did it. The other question was like my process with writing. That's really interesting. Well, I don't know if this is going to like answer it, but the way I experience like my writing process is as a marriage. The way I think about it is I always ask poets or just artists in general, what is your relationship with your art? Because it's the only honest, truly, it's one of the few and only places where you can label the relationship and you have full power of it. People sometimes don't think that, but like once you kind of hit a point where like you see like my relationship with poetry is a marriage. Poetry's never gonna leave me. Poetry visits other people, and poetry is loved by other people, and poetry and I have like a very special, specific relationship. And if poetry is not visiting me in the sense like I have a writer's block, quote unquote, that just means like I need to do more work in my relationship with poetry. Or like if I feel like betrayed by poetry or whatever, that's me renegotiating my relationship. So as of lately, just renegotiating my relationship with poetry is a adamant thing, where I used to just write and just like let it out into the world. And now working, like I guess I can talk about it. I'm working on a book. Now I have to renegotiate the relationship I have with poetry, where it needs to be a regular routine and almost like a job. So, which is not to say that I haven't treated it like a job before, but it was a different kind of job. The way like my process has been has honestly just been like learning to love. Honestly, it's a very love-filled relationship. I hear a lot of writers and poets, like I'll ask that question and they'll be like, oh, you know, like she's the one that got away, or we're just dating, or she's like, poetry's elusive, or someone once said their relationship with poetry was unfaithful. And I was like, wow, that's a very interesting perspective to have. But like once you think of it like a marriage, you're never jealous of other people's relationship with poetry. You're never jealous, because you know that you and poetry are together forever. You know, so for me, that's kind of, I don't know if that like helps the writing process, but it definitely, it's the kind where it's very peaceful and really, I never want to strain the relationship. I never want to overwork it. But I also like know it's important to feed that relationship and nurture it just like any other one that you have. Like it taught me a lot about love, to be honest, and how to love. I don't know if that answered it.
No, it does. And it's interesting because most people would view poetry as just a vehicle to share their thoughts and emotions. And I think you describing it as a relationship, is interesting because, again, most people don't view poetry that way. And I guess my follow-up question then is, as you view poetry as a relationship, and like any relationship with human beings, there's challenges that come with these relationships. Mm-hmm. What are some challenges that, let's say it this way, what are some challenges that continually come up with your relationship with poetry?
So the one that's been quite persistent as of late has been honestly just kind of having a routine of writing. Uh-huh. I usually, with writing, for me, I'll like get an idea and I'll be like, okay, cool, I need to write that down right now. Like, I've never had like a regular practice of every day siphoning off like an hour of my day writing or editing or reading. I usually just am like really lax, and like, I guess like in this relationship, I'm pretty low maintenance. Like I'm pretty, and like, that's not to say that I'm not writing a lot or I'm not like taking notes a lot. It's just like, I'm just like, I'm channeling the energy, right? You know, when like the days where I don't feel that way and I have to write, I don't know how to do that. So that's something that like I'm now learning, like with this relationship where I've been really loving and mature, now I need to be a student to poetry. Yeah. Like any relationship, personally, in my opinion, like a romantic one or whatnot, when you're with a partner, the way that I kind of think about it, you're honoring your partner's inner child. You're sometimes their parent. You're sometimes the child. You're sometimes the student and the teacher, just in that partnership. So for me right now, I'm turning more into needing to be a student than like, does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. In a way? Yeah.
I have to be a student, where for such a long time I've been a teacher with poetry, like using poetry as a vehicle to teach other people or help other people. Yeah. But now I need to learn more about her and I need to practice. And it's definitely been a challenge, especially because I have so much to say, which is another like reason I need to be a better student, is I have so much to say and I can't get it out on paper.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of poets struggle with that. And the way that I kind of combat it, at least in my relationship with poetry, is I go to workshops. Mm-hmm. I almost kind of think of workshops as like, a gym or like couples therapy.
Yeah.
It's just like, you know, I just think like it's a really important way to like kind of not take, you don't, for me, writing workshops, like you kind of take the responsibility off your end to like come up with the material, and someone kind of gives you the on ramp to writing.
Yeah.
And so that really, that's always helped me. School in some way has always helped me write. So, that's been like a challenge before, probably back in college. I think, yeah, for sure in college, maybe a little bit after, but not too much. I used to be like very envious of other people's kind of success and kind of their relationship with poetry. And ever since I kind of solidified, because I like wrote down, I had to write it down, and it felt very serious about how I'm married. just to kind of solidify it on paper.
Yeah.
I haven't felt that way since, but I used to be really envious of other people's relationships with poetry, or just like how they successful they were or how well they wrote. But now it's just such a graceful, honorable, like it's such an honor, because when I get like rejections from publications, or, you know, when I'm not too successful, or when like I'm not creating and people are not like giving me praise, I think about all of the other great poets and artists who were in the who have experienced what I've experienced. And it makes me think about what great company I'm in.
Yeah.
To be like, when anytime I get rejected from a publication, I don't feel sad. I'm just like, wow, I'm in such great company. Like some of the best writers in the world have been rejected. So it's like, it's kind of like an honor in a way.
Yeah. No, that's so good. Yeah. You mentioned earlier that you're working on a book. What? So that's one of your projects. Any other projects that you got going on?
Yeah, I'm right now working. I truly believe that writing is a way to build bridges within yourself and outside of yourself. So I've kind of, and I also really care about accessibility and mental health care. Mm-hmm. And using writing as an avenue to help people. So I've been working on something called The Workshop, which happens
every Wednesday, which it happens every Wednesday. And it's just basically for anybody, anybody. It doesn't even need to be poets, just who want to write better and communicate better with themselves and with other people and kind of unearth anything that is like troubling them. I kind of provide prompts and guidance, and I plan on kind of like getting more training in this experience and kind of, you know, getting more certified, because I want to be qualified to, you know, handle it in a way. So the projects I've been working on, that project is definitely really near and dear to my heart. And I definitely plan on turning into a business one day, hopefully, inshallah, knock on wood.
Yeah. Now, you said it's every Wednesday. Where is it located, or is it online, or?
It's located right. Well, we're moving locations right now. It is at 4th Street Marketplace, in Santa Ana, but I do plan on moving it soon, just because if you've ever been to 4th Street Market, it's like a food court.
Yeah.
So we just meet in a food court and like work on it. But hey, like every idea starts somewhere.
Yeah, of course.
I'm hoping to kind of move it into a more intimate space where people feel more comfortable. I actually just had a meeting with someone about that today. So I'm pretty sure like that's going to be a thing. And I'm going to shameless plug. You can follow us on Instagram at @theworkshop_OC. And it's a really important space, and I'm just working on kind of promoting it and just turning it into a business, hopefully one day.
So you have this piece that's up on social media right now. Well, I don't know how long ago it was posted, but it's called Pale Blue Dot. Can you unpack that? Yeah, can you unpack that poem a little bit?
Yeah, A Pale Blue Dot. I wrote it because it's a kind of like I used the small dot that Carl Sagan wrote about when the Voyager 1 turned its camera around and took a photo of Earth from about, I think, 14 billion miles away or something of that sort, or 7 point. I don't remember like the math part. I'm not good with math or the numbers part, because it's not even math at this point. And Carl Sagan wrote like, Earth is this vast, or is this small dot in this vast cosmic arena, and think of all the rivers of blood spilled, so that in glory and vain we could become momentary masters of a fraction of a dot. And like, when I read that, it makes us feel so small, right? And it makes us feel so insignificant. And I think a lot of times we feel really insignificant and small and not understood. But then we forget that like there are so many planets, so that like we're all our own little worlds, like all just around each other, and we're all very similar and very different. So I wrote that poem because I wanted, you might feel alone and like sad or misunderstood, but like there is always a way to connect. There is always something that we can bounce off of, or similarities. Like someone can tell me a story about, you know, some kind of trauma that they experienced, and I can like think about the way I've responded to trauma and how horrible it was for me, and in some way use that as a bridge to connect with them. Yeah. And that's just essentially what empathy is just being able to connect and just not to feel alone. And so I wrote that poem just so people wouldn't feel alone, even though that is the truth. Yeah. Like it is true that like we are these small little dots in the world, and we are insignificant, but in a way we are significant to all the people around us, you know, and significant to right now.
Yeah. Now in that piece you said, and although life is sometimes lonely and terrifying, don't forget that there are always planets like you orbiting the sky, kind of touching upon what you just said. And of course, we live in this world where loneliness and depression does seem to be commonplace, especially now. And I read somewhere that 1 out of 3 kids, specifically in Gen Z, deal with some form of anxiety. And that's a lot of people. And that line in your piece, to me, speaks to the importance of community and finding healing within the context of togetherness.
Yes.
So can you touch upon how writing has fostered an environment of healing for you?
Ooh, that's an amazing question.
Why, thank you. I wrote it myself.
It's a really, like, good job, Apus. Yeah, no, that's a really great question. Honestly, I didn't, and I feel kind of bad saying this because I've had, writing has been a thing for me my whole life. Basically, like, my first true experience, I remember the moment I read my first poem. I was in third grade, and I remember the poem. It was Trees by Joyce Kilmer, I think, which is one of my favorite poems. But I feel kind of guilty because for me, I didn't realize how healing poetry was until probably like a year ago. Like, I wrote poems and, you know, like, they were really meaningful to me. But yeah, I'm gonna be really honest. Like, I was in an abusive relationship for 3 years. Thank you. And this, like, last year when I got out of it in the summer, I experienced some of the hardest times of my life, just a lot of challenges that brought me down. And writing became my way out in a way that I had never thought. I had written a poem, like a joy. The poem is called Joy. And it's like, what's the line? I know joy. One of the lines I wrote it at a workshop, actually. And I wrote it because I was feeling happy. And, but like, and I just kind of wrote it. And then my mentor, Alicia Wise, said, sometimes you write a piece and you don't know how valuable it is until later. Wow. And for me, I wrote that before the summer hit, before all of these like really difficult things came about in my life. And one of the lines I wrote is, joy is found in every breath I keep taking, that I choose to be alive because I know joy exists. Yeah. And any moment throughout that whole summer, that line really saved me, like, at some of the hardest times in my life. And I've never had my own work do that for me. And all the poems that I had written in that summer were like such a purging of like emotions and experience, and like that for me just like healed me. Like, I had written poems about my family that were really difficult and painful, but now I have a much better relationship with my parents, and I have to thank that poem for getting that out of me. Mm-hmm. So I really think that, I don't know if it like fully answers your question, but for me, I didn't realize the healing power of poetry until like a year ago. Yeah. Where like writing, whatever it is, bad, good, anyway, it's a stepping stone into a better version of you. Yeah. and like a healing. So if you're writing about what hurts, if you're doing it in a way that's sustainable and like, you know, there are people safeguarding you and protecting you and you have a good self-care system, it's really helpful. I don't know if I answered.
No, but you did. And so, well, to that end, right, so you've been teaching these workshops.
Yeah.
Can you maybe, how have you seen poetry, maybe in your students or those whom you are overseeing, how have you seen poetry been healing for them?
Yeah, that's a really beautiful, that's a really good question. I have a couple of people who've come to me and been like, I haven't written in years. I just feel like I have so much to write about that I like don't even know where to start, which is like my bread and butter. That's like how, like, that's why I go to workshops. So I'm always like, thank you for coming. And then like, I've been able to provide an opportunity where like they're writing again.
Yeah.
And they're writing weekly, and it kind of just exercises that muscle for them, because I really believe writing is a muscle, and it's hard, and you feel very lonely, and writing sometimes feels super lonely. So when you have a community of writers who are kind of going through a very similar thing that you are, it's actually really inspiring to be around it. So for me, just even providing the space where there's other writers just complaining or just like, you know, talking.
Yeah.
It's really healing. So I've been able to see people who have never written, who haven't written a poem in years, write again. I've had musicians like work on better lyrics that are stronger and like really true to them. Because for me personally, I'm really glad if a piece is good, but if it isn't honest,
I don't, you know, like yeah. I have a little bit of trouble. So I always like encourage honesty and just being like, it's great if it's a great poem, but it doesn't mean much if it's not true and good for you yeah. in a way. That's so, so like I've seen a lot of people just like write more or just have to deal with problems through their writing. Actually the workshop that I'm working on right now, cause I lesson plan for these workshops.
Well, that's good.
I like full lesson plan. I think this time around, we're going to be talking about the personal and the detailed, because I think very much that we talk about very broad things and broad experiences, but I think there's a strength in speaking about the personal. Yeah. So, it's been like a really beautiful kind of like healing thing just to be in community with people who want the same things that you want or are pursuing the same things you want, and being able to facilitate that. For me, I always say like, I'm not running the workshop. I'm honestly just a gardener in it, and we're all gardening together and I'm just presiding over it in a way. Like I write the prompts. I write with the prompts too. Like, it's like a community garden in a way.
We, as this tightly packed bundle of human beings, are always taught that we are small blue dots in this sea of empty black space, that we are black holes swallowing in on ourselves. We tether in all sorts of things like anger, sadness, depression, and sometimes even love. We were somehow taught not to see each other. That we must grow thicker skin. That we must stop being a baby. That we should grow up. To stop being so sensitive to others. To shut our mouths and refuse to speak all our translations of this impossible earth. But take a look around you. Look at all the pale blue, green, and red dots in this electric space around us. And although life is sometimes lonely and terrifying, don't forget that there are always planets like you orbiting the sky. You are never just a simple pale blue dot.
So shifting gears a little bit now, it being July and it being the month that this country, that America, celebrates its Independence Day, what does freedom mean for you specifically? Living in this country as a woman, as a citizen, as a woman of color, as a as an Iranian woman, as a millennial even, what does freedom look like and what does it mean for you?
That's a really interesting question. The way I think about it, and I don't, the first word that pops up in my head is safety. I think people forget freedom isn't, at least for me personally, as like a woman, as like a survivor, as a Iranian person and a millennial, I think personally true freedom comes from cultivating safety within yourself and then within the relationships that you have. Because if you're just, the way I think about it is, I don't want to try new things or be free to do whatever I want if it isn't like safe or healthy or sustainable, you know? So for example, like, I don't know, in any way, like if I want to skydive, I don't want to like skydive if I'm like upset or like going through something. I want to skydive in like abundance and like happiness and healthiness. And like, so for me personally, I don't know if that makes sense. Maybe like a better example is like, I personally don't drink when I'm sad.
Right.
So I don't think like for me personally, that's like the best way to do it. I want to have like a drink when I'm happy or like doing well. And I think that's a freedom. So for me, freedom means cultivating safety within myself and within the relationships that I have with people and my community. So if someone feels safe with me, they are free. That's what like really helped as like a woman, like being safe, feeling safe in America is a freedom, you know, and I, thankfully I am more safe than other women in other countries, but there are definitely places and times and areas of this country where I am not safe. Therefore I'm not free. And that's kind of the way I think about it because, or like as a Iranian person, that's definitely also a truth. there are people in America, like there's Iranians who can't come to America for the executive order.
Right.
And that's a lack of freedom, and that's a lack of safety in a way. So that's kind of how my brain kind of interprets freedom.
Okay.
If that, yeah.
No, that's good. So kind of now fusing creativity, fusing poetry and faith. So with my faith background, being a pastor, of course, following Jesus, right? We have entire books in the Bible, for instance, like the book of Psalms, where you have these authors who are brutally honest in their interactions with God. You know, sometimes they share their anger towards God. They share their frustrations. Of course, they also share their, you know, times when they're happy and elated and just so feeling well connected to Him. But it's in these authors' honest cries that they connect with and that they experience God. Can you maybe touch upon how you've experienced God in your writing?
Oh, wow. Yeah. I actually, Psalms is one of my just favorite sections of the Bible. It's Jewish poetry, and I studied it back in college, and it's actually the section anytime I'm like experiencing any kind of like pain, I just read through it because it's so comforting. For me, the times I experience God is at least in my writing, is I think every time I write. Is that like really cliche? That's so cliche.
For a poet like you, yeah, it is.
It's so cliche. I think it's, well, because I just, like you say that, you ask that question, and I think about the time I wrote like one of my poems, The Heart Has Four Cavities. Mm-hmm. And when I wrote that, I was sobbing. Mm-hmm. I was sobbing when I wrote that. That level of vulnerability, I couldn't have accessed that all on my own. There was emotion in me that begged to like spill out. And what happened is after I wrote about that, after like performing it a couple times, I actually like have really moved past that feeling. So writing as like a sense of purging of like pain and like processing that pain, I think is truly like an act of God. And then when I'm writing about the cycle of life and like the history, and like I've been writing a lot about cyclicalness, and I wrote a poem a while back called What Is Sheila Sad? And it's all about generations upon generations of how we've all done very similar things, where we've all danced in the night, you know, we've all like celebrated, we've all cried, we're all like bodies. And even in that, like there's a sense of like God in there. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it's so cliche, but I think like writing is the closest to God I ever get.
Wow.
It really is. And I think that's why when I say I'm married to poetry, it's in a way saying like I have a really like important, vital, lifelong connection and relationship to God.
Yeah.
And I just want to share that. It's like kind of, it's so cliche. It's so cliche. I'm like saying it and I'm like, wow, like you, girl.
I thought you speak in metaphors. What's going on here?
I know. How dare you?
No, but it's good. I think it also touches upon, I mean, there's the belief that God is everywhere, right? Omnipresent.
Yeah.
So, I mean, even as you say, every time I go to my writing and every time I jot in my journals, God is there. And I think, yeah, I mean, if you extend it a little bit, it's not as cliche maybe as you.
Yeah. Yeah. Like my mom, I grew up with my mom saying God is as close to you as your jugular. I think about like God is everything. And I think about my relationship with poetry. And this is kind of when everything kind of gets in a circle, like God and poetry and love are everything. They're everything. They're like everywhere. So it's like, I'm in awe constantly of just like the world in general. And it's because I see a poem in everything, which means I see love in everything, and which means I see God in everything.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to be like, I'm the greatest person ever.
No.
I definitely don't want, but it's definitely like, it's absolutely 100% I don't even know how to say that word, but just like, it's 100% the truth. Like I just see it in everything. And I think it's a really valuable thing to share.
That's good. No, I feel like we can chat forever.
I know.
But it's so good. I think, especially when we do Soapbox, I feel like we're just busy and we see each other in passing. This feels like one of our most deepest conversations that we've had. And it took an interview for this podcast for it to happen. And,
it happened.
You know, and I appreciate it. Maybe one last question as we wrap things up. Maybe there's someone out there. You talked about how, what was it, like 12 years ago when you first got on the mic, you know, the nervous wreck that you were, you ripped the Band-Aid off.
Yeah.
Maybe you can share a word of advice for the budding poet slash spoken word artist who is just afraid to step up, but they know they have to get up there. Any words of comfort or encouragement to that one or two people out there, or maybe more, who you would just want, if you could just reach your hand out of the microphone and just kind of put your hand on the back, what would you say to them?
There's two things, and it kind of has like a little baby story behind it. I went to like a community healing event yesterday, and I just noticed a couple people who are really nervous to speak behind the mic. And I hear often like people having a lot of stage fright, and I remember that feeling, and I sometimes even feel that now. I think the advice I would give is that it gets easier. And the reason it gets easier, it's kind of dark, is you just get new problems.
Yeah.
And those just take on more weight. So the more and more you do it, the less and less that becomes a problem.
Yeah.
And it's, I'm trying to make it like not cliche. It's just like, it really like, because that's, I thought about that yesterday. I was like, why is it so easy for me to just take a mic and get up there and talk now? Which is, I'm a really timid person personally. So I'm like thinking about it. I'm like, can I like go up there and use that mic? And it's because that's become really, really easy for me to do, sometimes to my detriment, but like very much it's a very easy thing for me to do, and it took me a really long time. So it just gets easier because you have to deal with like other things that get on your plate, which is the dream as like a writer, right? Is to like, the mic is just the beginning. Like reading on the mic is just the beginning. There's so much more, and that's the best part, I think.
That's
wow,
good.
I'm so cliche.
No, that's good. I like that. I like that. So one last thing, we've been doing this with all the interviews. We've been doing this thing called the lightning round.
Oh boy.
I spit two words. You pick the first one that kind of resonates with you. Can we do that?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, here we go. Coffee or tea?
Tea.
YouTube or Vimeo?
YouTube.
Corporation or mom and pop?
Mom and pop.
Haiku or Sin Cane?
Ooh. I want to say haiku because I've written more of those.
Italian sonnet or Shakespearean sonnet?
Oh, Italian.
Pen or pencil?
Pen.
Notes on your phone or notes in a journal?
Notes on my phone, as much as I get it.
Kindle or books?
Books.
Los Angeles or Orange County?
Long Beach?
Well, there you go.
It's in the middle.
Fast or slow?
Slow.
Red or blue?
Blue.
The Ugly Mug or the Poetry Lounge?
I want to say Ugly Mug.
Well, there you go, lightning round. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for playing, Sheila. And really quickly, I know you mentioned the handle for the workshop, but what are the other handles that you got going on for those out there who can look you up and follow you on social media?
So if you want to follow me on social media, I'm at O-O-Sheila, O-H-O-H, Sheila, S-H-E-I-L-A with two A's. That's my Instagrams. And then I run the workshop, which is at the workshop with two P's underscore O-C, because there's so many workshops. But yeah, that's where I'm at. Or you can find me on my website, which is SheilaJSadra.com. And yeah, that's me.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, Miss Sheila on the mic. Make sure you check her out on social media and support her work. Look out for her upcoming book. And like we say every week, please make sure you rate and review this podcast, as well as head to the Patreon page to support this show. Until next time, be the light, extend your hand in love, and make peace with someone this upcoming week. Stay blessed, and we'll catch you next time. Peace.